keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Really happy to be back alive and well on this Wednesday, November 15th, 2017. What a crazy, insane, amazing time to be alive, right? So many just crazy things happening, you know? Good things, bad things, ridiculous things going on. Maybe the most ridiculous story of this election cycle, because of course we never get a fucking year off, right? It's like, okay, 2016, no, okay, Trump won, and you know, there was the whole congressional run, and we're like, okay, cool, at least we got a 2-year break from this. No, sorry, there's fucking elections going on right now too. And what is the most ridiculous thing going on? Roy Moore, this Republican running for Senate in Alabama, accused of having sexual relations with a 14-year-old girl and accused of sexually assaulting a 16-year-old girl. Somehow this dude is still running in the race. So yeah, I think that just gives you a little hint of what kind of ridiculousness we're dealing with on the political front right now. And you know, it's after the election of Trump, which of course to our loyal listeners will know, I totally got wrong. I totally thought Trump was going to lose, and I thought Hillary was going to win. But you know, in the wake of that and seeing the monumental shift in talking points and attitudes between people, not only in the political sphere, but within our own kind of outer social groups, and so many of the people who I thought I knew who they were wound up getting seduced by the poison, which I think is the alt-right and the nationalist movements and the people who are supporting Trump. Just seeing the whole shift, and then of course we're seeing this new dynamic with the far left and Antifa and them facing off with the alt-right in the streets, and it's like white nationalists versus, you know, borderline communists. Very, very peculiar place we're at. In the United States. And of course, you know, now with Trump at the head of things, we're dealing with this really, really brash kind of, you know, undressed version of, you know, the national political identity. We're in brand new times. Like, that's, I don't know how else to say it. We're in an unknown period where things can happen, things can develop rapidly, and, you know, all we can do really is capitalize on them or prepare for them. We talked a bit about this last show, and you know, I really enjoyed our last show, and really got to talk about some interesting things. But we're going to talk some more about some other interesting things tonight. I got a special guest in the studio. My buddy Mike is joining us, and we're going to talk about some things that we have going on here just locally, but also how maybe we can kind of help people get the word out and do things on their own out. Because, you know, we got people listening on this program, not only from around the United States, but, you know, I'm sure we've got people all around the world. I'm sure we've got people in Europe, Asia, South America, Mexico, listening and you know, wondering, waiting for something to happen, tired of hearing us, me and DB Schwartz, railing on every day about bullshit politics and stuff. Ready to take action in your own communities because, you know, guess what? That really is the ultimate thing that's going to make a difference in your life, is what you do on your own with people you know, or even people you don't know, people close to you, people you could work with online. Doing things on our own, taking matters into our own hands, that's how we actually do shit, not waiting on some politician asshole who we hope is going to keep his promises, or who we hope is going to actually do what he says he does, and hope that he gets elected, and hope that he actually does something, and hope that the people that also have to agree with him are going to agree with it. I mean, there's so many variables in there. Putting your fucking bets on a politician is probably the dumbest gamble you can do in life, right? You're hoping that your guy wins. You're hoping that he actually keeps his word. You're hoping that he doesn't break his promises. You're hoping that people in Congress go along with his agenda. You're hoping that it gets implemented. And you're hoping that when they do some kind of legislation, that it actually works. How many variables are in there? There's a million variables in there. And so we're going to talk a little bit about bringing some shit back to your own life and doing your own thing. But first, let me introduce our panel tonight. Of course, we've got my longtime co-host on the line, DB Schwartz. What's up, dude?
Hey, not much, Nick. It's good you're talking about local stuff, because on the 18th, I'll be getting a front row seat for the spearheading of the legalization of marijuana up here in Minnesota. So that's going to be the fight I choose to deal with this winter, because with the little girl suing Sessions and a lot of people up here going through really, really, I'm just going to say it flat out, it's about a 50-50 chance with chemo, even if you're going to the Mayo Clinic, which is one of the best up here. So 50-50 is not good odds when we know we have better, we have access to better ways of therapy. I mean, half the time people die from cancer, it's because chemo breaks them down and there's nothing to help them build themselves back up. And that's what a lot of these CBD oils can do. So that's what I'm going to choose right up here to fight with over this winter. I know down by you, Nick, you got some massive appropriations of funds that are making homeless people's lives horrible hells. And I've been reading that, and that would be something that I would love to see somebody tackle.
Yeah, dude, the homelessness issue across the country is just in dire straits, man. Like, it's getting really, really nasty. I mean, here in San Diego in particular, we've got, I think San Diego has the highest per capita homelessness issue out of any major city in the country. We've got well over 10,000 homeless here in San Diego. And a lot of these guys, I think like around 40% of them, are military veterans. And as you all listening know, there's been this hepatitis A outbreak here in San Diego, and it's killing a bunch of people. I mean, there's been dozens of people that are dead. Dozens of people. I mean, you know, we hear about these mass shootings and stuff, and, you know, we hear about that kind of thing all the time. But dozens of people in San Diego, homeless people, many of which have probably been military veterans, are dying from preventable causes. I mean, they're dying from hepatitis, which, you know, is a preventable thing. You don't have, if these people were living in better conditions, it wouldn't be spreading around.
And then I see this story, Nick, where they spent $2 million on one bathroom. And now they're going to put advertising in it, and it's going to be used primarily by the homeless, not visitors. So it just shows the pork barreling is literally killing people.
It's ridiculous, dude. It's ridiculous, man. Is that in San Diego? I didn't see that story yet.
Yeah, they spent $2 million on one bathroom. I mean, couldn't that have built like 10?
Ah, dude, I swear I could probably build bathrooms for like $2,000. And $2 million is just that's ridiculous. That's amazingly ridiculous.
Plus, they're gonna put advertising. It's just God, come on.
Look, one thing going on. Hold on, let me pull it up here. One event going on this weekend in San Diego is they're feeding the homeless out in El Cajon, because you know El Cajon is a pretty big city in San Diego County, and they recently banned feeding the homeless in parks. And so, not only look, it's bad enough if you're homeless. There's a good chance you got mental illness. There's a good chance you're living in filth, because there's very few public facilities where you can go use the restroom and take a shower. If that weren't bad enough, now they're making it illegal for people to give out food to the people who are homeless and are starving. They're literally on the verge of, you know, could die at any moment from any various different, you know, a bunch of different things. And so they're banning the act of feeding homeless. And so in El Cajon this weekend in San Diego on Sunday at 2 p.m., they've got a event where they're feeding the homeless at 1153 East Madison Avenue in El Cajon. And, you know, I'm probably going to try to get out there and bring some food. I'll probably bring some, like, pies or something. I remember last time when I gave out food to the homeless, I brought pie, and, like, it was, like, a huge popular hit. They love the pie. So I'll probably bring some pie, but more importantly, I'm also going to bring my phone, and if anything goes down, I'll be videotaping, live streaming through the Anti-Media Facebook page to all 2 million of our followers. And if something happens, where if the cops show up and they want to say, you know what, we're going to shut down you guys feeding the homeless, well, guess what? It's going to be live streamed across the whole world, and everybody's going to see it, and these people are going to look like fucking maniacs like they are. I mean, the fact that you're banning groups from feeding homeless people means you're a fucking maniac. There's something wrong with you. It's not just something that it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's a new law. I understand that law. No, you're banning people from feeding other people. That's ridiculous. Like, it's crazy. Like, how far gone are we? And this is just a microcosm of the grander scheme of things going on in this country. The callousness, the greed, the just disregard for humanity and disregard for even the children at this point. It's become that ridiculous where nobody's giving a shit about anything. This is a movement where we need to take a stand, dude. Like, all across the United States, there's an assault on homeless people. It's not just in San Diego. It's not just in big cities. I mean, homelessness has become criminalized. A bunch of these people, and homelessness rates have gone way up.
Have you seen that camp in the Bay? I want to say that there's one camp with like 12,000 people now, and the cops are saying there's literally nothing they can even do. They can't even move them out if they want it. It's permanent now.
Where's it at?
It's up in the Bay. God, I want to say it's like around Oakland area, but I don't know for sure. But I've seen pictures of it, and it's sprawling. It takes over a whole, like a whole canyon.
Yeah.
And they're working, dude. That's the most messed up part about it is they're working people, a lot of them, living in tents.
Yeah, man, and that's the thing. That's the paradox here, especially, like, look at San Francisco. I mean, did you guys see that story? It was, like, it had to be, like, 6 months ago or so, about how people living in the San Francisco area making over $100,000 a year, which is something I've never even come close to making, being below the poverty line. Have you guys seen that? Making $100,000 a year and you're below the poverty line because the cost of living in the San Francisco Bay Area is that ridiculous. And so the fact that there's homeless people, what does that mean? You make under $40,000 a year? I mean, if you make double what the minimum wage is, you're still living in poverty wages.
Like, dude, they can't even afford rent.
Yeah,
they're working full time, and I bet you they're making like $15 an hour.
Dude.
And they're living in amazing tents.
The homeless people,
you know what I mean?
probably have better jobs than we've got. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not even playing about that either. I'm not even joking. Like, the homeless people in San Diego probably make more than the average person across the country make, except the cost of living there is literally impossible. So they live homelessly, and what does the government do? It criminalizes it. Throws them in jail for living homeless. And those are the people with in a better position. I mean, the people with mental illness that literally can't hold a job, I mean, they're even worse off. They're completely in the hands of the government, and they only get the only money they get, many of them, are from, you know, military veterans who are permanently disabled getting, you know, stipends from the government and people on government assistance. They're completely at the will of the government, dude. Like, and so they're so screwed. It's the most messed up thing. I mean, these people are literally are basically modern day, you know, indentured servants in one way or another. I wouldn't go as far as calling it slavery or anything like that, but it's definitely a version of indentured servantry. And it's messed up, dude. Like, it's the homelessness situation here in San Diego in particular has gotten so bad that you can't really go. If you're a person that lives in San Diego, you can't really go anywhere and say, oh, wow, this is, it's so sad what's going on in this area. Because it's going on right there, right here in our backyard, and it's going on right now. So yeah, of course, I'm kind of biased on this because I live in San Diego and from San Diego, so I, you know, kind of know what's going on around here. And seeing the homelessness population blow up the way it has, I've been involved in homelessness activism for like 4 years, 5 years now. And when we first started out, there was only, you know, a fraction of the people that are out there now, dude. Like, the tent cities went from going in one block radius in downtown to 10 block radius in downtown, dude. Like, it is ridiculous out there, bro. And, you know, Derek Bros came into town just a few months ago, and a lot of his, you know, he was traveling the whole country giving his, doing the book tour. And every country, every city they went to, they would do some type of activism outreach, and a lot of it had to do with homelessness. And you know, when I took him down to San Diego, downtown San Diego, so we had like 50 meals to hand out to you know, just to anyone that was down there living in the you know, Skid Row area. We handed the meals out within like 15 minutes. First of all, second of all, I was talking to Derek about the amount of people and how it's grown exponentially in recent years. And he was basically saying, yeah, dude, like, everywhere I've gone so far, everybody else is saying the same thing. Like, all the other activists that he's met up with all around the country have been saying, dude, the homelessness population has blown up recently. And this is a story that has gone completely untouched here. Look, there's a bunch of people right now becoming homeless in this country, and they're not just people with mental illness, and they're not just the typical, you know, what people would think of. I know many people think homeless people are just lazy and stuff like that, which I think most of the time is not the case. But a lot of these people that are now becoming homeless, they work many of them full-time jobs. They don't make very much money, but the fact of the matter is that the cost of living in the United States in all these places has become unaffordable, dude. Like, if it weren't for the fact that that I use my apartment as also the headquarters of the anti-media, I wouldn't be able to afford it, dude. Like, I wouldn't. I'd be living in a much rougher spot. And, you know, you guys listening to the show know that you always hear sirens blaring while I'm doing the show. And, you know, we're not exactly in a nice neighborhood or anything like that.
Nick, your biggest problem is your the constant drones flying around your office.
Seriously, you guys remember that when that drone crashed out front? But look, dude, it's just become unaffordable, man. It's become unaffordable for people who aren't inheriting properties and stuff like that. You know, if you're a millennial person who has to go out and buy your own house, good fucking luck. Like,
I just talked to somebody about that today, Nick. It's a two-bed, one-bath it's $2,000 a month with a $250 HOA. And my friend's like, should I get it and split it? And I was like, can you get $1,000 for that other bedroom? And they're like, oh yeah. And I'm like, well then sure. But I'm like, that's insane though, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it would be understandable if the general income has gone up for people, where it's like, okay, the cost of living is now just exponentially ridiculous, but our incomes have gone up like quadruple from what they started at. Okay, that's understandable then. But that's not actually what's going on here. It's everybody's barely cutting it with like $12 an hour or some shit. And I've got friends who make well over $15 an hour that can barely, if they can afford it, barely afford a one bedroom apartment. And so we're dealing with a situation that is grown unjust, basically, where the property values and the rent prices have gone far above what people can actually, regular working class people can actually afford. And this is a big difference, dude. Like, our parents were probably able to work and buy a fucking decent house, and our grandparents are able to work. Even just one person in the family working, be able to afford a decent house, be able to afford these kind of amenities and shit.
That's what 4% inflation a year does, and that's why you never want to give control of your money supply to a private corporation, dude.
Yeah, and the inflation is what's killing everybody. Anyway, that being said, I've got my buddy Mike in the house, and we're about to introduce Mike. What's up, dude? How you doing, man?
What's going on, man? What's going on?
Chilling, dude. Chilling. So, look, there's a bunch of shit going on around this country and around the world that is absolutely fucked up, right? And it's, at least for me, it's become pretty apparent that just going out and going to the voting booth every 4 years is basically not helpful, and probably actually, in my opinion, it's actually destructive, because it gives people a false sense of, okay, I'm in control here. But it doesn't have to be the case, right? Because we can have control. We can take control of our own destiny if
we do it ourselves.
If we start doing stuff from a more local level and doing things our own.
Yep.
Right? And so, Mike, that's why I wanted to bring you on tonight, because we're talking about doing some stuff locally here in San Diego to kind of take our own destinies and our own fates back into our own hands, right?
Yep, that's what I'm hoping to do. Ideally, we spend tons of money on food, we spend tons of money on, you know, shelter, and we spend tons of money on electricity. If you can eliminate those three costs, or you can essentially say build everything at cost, material costs, and everyone's willing to contribute, you're talking about taking out a lot of expenses. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't have to pay $1,800 a month or $2,000 a month for rent, and all we would be paying was the material cost of building the actual, you know, house, or say our electricity, we do solar power with, you know, was it power with a, you know, the, was it, what is Tesla's got? Those battery wall batteries?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So essentially going off grid, being able to do that. And then also, if everyone's growing their own food and we're all contributing, and just going kind of more back to like a bartering, if anything. I don't know. There's so many problems out there, right? And, you know, if we just, we're going to be getting together here soon, you know, to sit down and start talking about some of the issues and seeing if we can come up with any solutions, really.
Yeah, dude. And I think, I think it's a great idea. And yeah, look, me and DB have talked about these kind of fundamental ideas of taking the system back in a way that's decentralized, because I think that's the main fundamental principle here. And this is kind of where I've been, the direction I've been shifting in for the last few years, politically, economically, environmentally, everything, is decentralization and taking it back to where we as a community handle the most of the general things that we need for survival. And of course, there's still going to be luxurious things that need much more resources to be built. Like, let's say, let's take things like Netflix, right? Netflix is great because it's like they have so many customers, they have billions of dollars in revenue, they can produce these awesome shows like Stranger Things or, you know, this is not a commercial for Netflix, by the way. We don't have any sponsors for this show. They can do these great, huge things, but we don't, what we don't need is McDonald's or fucking Walmart growing this shitty ass food and serving it up to us, making us unhealthy, to and overcharging us, right? And what we don't need is these parasitic fucking landlords, like the ones who I have to deal with, who won't even help me in a little situation when I've been their best fucking tenant for a long time. Nothing personal here. Where we don't have to deal with these landlords and these Walmarts and these super huge communication networks like, you know, the Cox Communication, Verizon, AT&T, your local power company. In certain aspects of our lives, we can take the power back to ourselves and to our, you know, into a decentralized management where we take control of it as a community or back just literally within our own hands. And not only, I think, you know, what we were first talking about is how it's going to save us money, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right? It, you know, we can, if people come together and get a property that they develop and live in for much cheaper than what we're paying right now, right? Yep. People come together and create their own community farm. You know, people come together and start pitching in and getting a solar panel system set up, right? Lower our cost of energy, get our energy only from ourselves instead of paying it to the energy company. We lower our costs, right? But also we increase our freedom. We increase our autonomy, right? Yeah. And so I think both of these things tied together, it just makes kind of what you're talking about all the more attractive.
Yeah, realistically, we can't just say that we can go off-grid and not pay, you know, not work and then just live for ourselves. It's just not realistic. There's stuff that we can't build. Like, I mean, if I need a refrigerator, if I need, like, a computer, like, I'm not going to be able to do that without money. So we're going to have to still work. We're still going to abide by laws and regulations that the state sets or the county or wherever you decide to live. But... and what we will do, ideally, is that we'll be able to pool our money together and then work on projects together. And then at some point, everybody that is living there is going to be there for, you know, they're not going to have to pay for, you know, for their shelter. They're not going to have to pay for their food. They're not going to have to pay for their electricity. Those three alone, I mean, shoot, imagine how much more money if you cut out that, you know?
Yeah.
And then what we can do with that is we can move forward from there. I mean, whether or not something like that'll be possible is a different story, but that's why we'll get together and talk about it. Figure it out. You know?
Exactly, dude. Hashing it out. And let me tell you something. Here's why it makes sense. Look, what we have now is labor and look, we're going a little deeper here into economics and stuff. Labor and capital are the two main functions of a economy, right? Right now, what we have going on is each one of us that works and has a job is committing labor into the system, right? The people who we work for commit capital and some labor into the system. And then there's a bunch of like middlemen in between the actual labor and capital and the final consumer, right? To where it's like, okay, well, if you go to the grocery store and you want to go buy some food, and let's just say a tomato. Somebody at the beginning of that supply chain committed the labor and the capital to grow that tomato, right?
Yep.
They had to have land, they had to have water, soil, they had to hire a worker to harvest the tomato. The amount of steps involved in getting that tomato to to market where you buy it at the store and bring it home and cook it. There's a lot of middlemen in between that. And from an economic standpoint, each time you can get cut out one of those middlemen, you make your end of the bargain a little bit sweeter, right? And all, I think the underlying fundamental principle that we're talking about here with taking things back and doing it at a community level and doing it for ourselves, self-reliance, is in the end, we're going to have to put in less labor to get out more product.
Yep.
And so what we're doing is we're not rewriting or reinventing the wheel or anything like that. All we're doing is looking at it from a more logical perspective and, you know, not to be an egoist here, but a self-interested perspective too. I mean, I look at undermining the, you know, status capitalist system right now that we have in the U.S., from a self-interested standpoint too, because it's not like, oh, I only want to do this to help other people. That's, I mean, I do want to help other people, but I'm also looking out for myself too. And if we can come up with a new system where I only have to put in 2 hours of work every day to be able to get enough out where it's like, I got enough food, I got enough electricity, I got enough roof over my head, I got enough stuff, everything that I need to happily survive, well, shit, I got a better deal. And looking at it in that perspective, it makes a lot of sense for us to start doing this kind of thing, because we lower our cost of food, we lower our cost of just our general cost of living, the cost of housing, and the cost of electricity. It all ends up coming back into our own pocket, or we get it reimbursed back with time.
Yeah.
Right?
Or we get to use it towards things like, you know, bettering our small little, our little community, if you will, you know? You get to buy, I mean, ideally what it is we wanted a system where the head of, say, some corporation like Walmart would be like, this is what's, you know, giving us updates, or like, I don't know, in the community that I kind of sort of envisioned would be is we would all essentially kind of inform everybody about what's going on in the everyday, like, lives of, you know, say, operating or running the garden or running, you know, say, the farm, or, you know, hey, harvest day is this day, you know, I need some people to come over and help out if you guys can do it from this time to this time. Like, just being more oriented, you know, community oriented, just being more connected with everyone. Because I'll be honest right now, I don't even know my neighbors.
Yeah, dude.
I don't know my neighbors.
You know, I think communities really can operate in a way that communities, once they're operating at high capacity and like full, you know, at their full function, communities operate like a well-oiled machine, you know, and there's a whole just system that organically falls into place that makes all of the community members' lives easier. You know, it's like a few people pitch in, help harvest a certain, you know, harvest a certain crop, and then everybody that for a few months eats from those, you know,
that harvest
of tomatoes or apples or whatever it is, you know. And I think that's a really good criticism of the United States, and it's something I've talked about on the show recently, several months ago, inspired and many times from my travels in Mexico and stuff, is just seeing the fact that the sense of community in the United States is so fucking deteriorated, dude. And really the only place, not the only place, okay, but the main place where community happens in this country is at the church. Like, people have their church communities, and I know a lot of people who are in the church that are very happy, and they have this great little support system built up within their own little church community and stuff, and it's a good support base. But everybody else, there's a bunch of people out there that don't go to church. There's a bunch of people that are atheists. There's a bunch of people that are just totally against organized religion. And there's a bunch of people who really, maybe they have a religion where there's no church near them that they can go to or anything. A lot of people are, like, looking for a community. A lot of people out there, like, trying to find this kind of support base that they can fit into and help make better. But the fact of the matter is, in the United States, those kind of relationships have been undermined, they've been, you know, demonized. I mean, people, and at this point, you go flip, turn on the news when you get home, and you're going to be fucking scared to leave your house. You know what I'm saying? You go home, and it's like, oh my God, fucking terrorists are, like, blowing shit up, and there's, like, mass shootings, and nobody's safe, and, you know, be scared. Because of, I think that has a lot to do with the fact that people don't get out there and have these, like, awesome, you know, self-regenerating communities that are sustainable, because it's been discouraged. But on that same note, not only can we, you know, I think around the world these communities happen kind of spontaneously. Like, they just happen, and since they're not discouraged, they just continue on. There's a bunch of great communities. You go anywhere in the world, I bet you go any country in the world, and you find, like, pretty awesome little communities and interesting things going on. In the U.S., like I said, they exist. I just got back from Houston. They're doing it out there in Houston with the Houston Freethinkers. But that being said, they're far, you know, far and few in between. Like, there's not that many supportive communities for non-church-going people out there where they could actually create a community, right? And that's a big aspect of why I think there's so much depression and anxiety and mental illness in the United States, is because people are kind of discouraged from practicing natural, you know, social organization, which is basically what these communities are. So I think with understanding that and going forward in a intentional, like an intentional direction with community building, that we could actually make some very powerful, not powerful in a bad way, but just very strong communities that are very supportive and very self-reliant in the future. And I think if we do it with intention, it could happen pretty quick. And I think it has the chance to change everything. I mean, this may sound small. It may, like, oh yeah, we're gonna come together and fucking have a community garden and stuff, right? Yeah. It's like, okay, cool. Like, that's not a big deal. But I honestly think that it's a much bigger deal than people think, because the impact it'll eventually have, like when these communities start, when we start saying, okay, you know what? We're tired of this bullshit where you guys are trying to scare us into our own fucking homes, and that we're scared to talk to our neighbors and shit. We're rejecting that, and we're embracing our own communities, and we're going to build strong social, you know, organizations. It's going to change our whole psychology, dude. Collectively, the whole country is going to be changed. This is some very interesting discussions, I think, to be had with, you know, human psychology and
people just need to realize we're all kind of the same. I mean, and we're all, not everyone's in the same boat, but a majority of us are in the same boat. We're barely getting by. And, you know, the news is always telling us who to hate, how many people to hate, what, you know, there's, I almost want to say being unique or being special is a double-edged sword. You know, there's like all these identities for all these different groups of people, and what that does is that just splits everyone up. It splits everyone up, and in reality, you know, we all are barely getting by. You know what I mean? If everyone just realized that, you know, we're all somewhat struggling, and we can all work together to you know, lessen that struggle, you know, maybe things will change.
Exactly.
You know, an article just came out that said for the majority of Americans, we're living in a third world lifestyle. I've been down to Peru, and people like to pretend like South America is the third world. I promise you, the average person down there is doing better than the average person up here as far as being happy and healthy. So I don't know what we think so great and what we think's going on up here that's really working.
Yeah, dude. The U.S. has a lot of work to do. Look, we're considered a first world country because we've got relatively developed infrastructure, and we've got a bunch of wealth and a bunch of power. Now, first of all, look, there's those three pillars are pretty fucking weak. Look, the infrastructure is falling apart. Driving down the street recently, I mean, just yesterday, I was talking with my girlfriend about it. I'm like, you know what? I used to be pissed off because there's so many potholes in the fucking street. because I'm tired of paying the taxes to fix the streets, and these motherfuckers spend it on bombing countries on the other side of the world that have nothing to do with me. But then I was driving down the street yesterday, and it was like all the street was like so full of potholes. I was basically driving off road, and I was like, shit, I kind of like this because I actually like driving off road, so it's kind of cool.
You ever think like somewhere deep down the government's all, well, why bother? We're just going to get in the mother load of all wars at some point. We're going to have to rebuild it anyway.
Yeah, hopefully not. Hopefully that's
That's seriously what they do, man. We have like we have wooden piping in San Francisco for water.
Wood pipes. Yeah, dude. I mean, look, what was it? Infrastructure, right? Infrastructure is fucking third world at this point, dude. Like a lot.
That's one of the things I liked about Bernie was he actually was saying like we could just divert 10% of the military and rebuild the whole infrastructure.
Like, what these guys do is the same thing that these other countries like Russia and China do. You know, every time there's or like in Brazil when there's like the Olympics and it's like, oh, there's going to be a bunch of people in Rio, so let's fix up Rio and kick all the homeless people out and make it look nice real quick. That's all these fools do, dude. You go down to Atlanta and you go to the airport. It's like, oh wow, this is a nice airport, and like the surrounding blocks are like pretty nice. And if you take the, you know, the designated route to down into downtown, you'll see pretty much, you know, it'll be pretty clean. You get anywhere outside of that kind of designated tourist area, and it's like, holy shit, Atlanta is not first world city. Like it's one of the biggest cities in the South, and it's got the biggest, most busiest airport in the world. And outside of the airport zone and the tourist district, you're going to be like, holy shit, like, okay, like, yeah, it's real as fuck.
Atlanta broke a precedent because it was the first city that used eminent domain on an entire, like, aquifer to get water and totally screwed these communities over. And now everybody that lived in those small communities had to move to Atlanta.
Yeah. You know, and so you got that. I mean, you got the wealth. The wealth of the United States is basically concentrated so high up. Like I was saying, man, like, look, you got people want to say, oh, yeah, America's first world, and, you know, a place like Peru or a place like, you know, Libya is like third world. Dude, most of the people in this country are living pretty close to the edge of poverty. And a bunch of them are already homeless, and a bunch of them are on the way to becoming homeless, and a bunch of them are barely cutting it. And, you know, it's not like, oh, everybody in this country is, like, rich and stuff. That's not, definitely not what's going on. And the third thing, the power of this, of the U.S. empire, is it's not, it doesn't carry the respect that it once did. I mean, we couldn't finish the job in Afghanistan. We couldn't finish the job in Iraq. We couldn't finish the job in Syria. We couldn't finish the job in Libya. I mean, at this point, the U.S., all it can do is regime change. That's really all we're capable of militarily at this point. I mean, what? Give me one foreign policy accomplishment that we've made since 9/11 besides regime change. What? We caught bin Laden? Took him, like, long enough, right? Guy that used to work for the CIA took him.
We didn't catch him. We killed him. So what good was that?
Yeah, and so
that was a bunch of crap anyway.
Yeah, and so like the power, the wealth, and the infrastructure—they're either crumbling or they're imbalanced. I mean, we just found out three people. What was it yesterday or the day before? The latest survey came out showing. Three individuals own as much wealth as the poorest half of the United States. 150 million something people own the same amount of wealth as three. As three people. Mark Zuckerberg and, I don't know, probably Bezos and Gates. I'm guessing were the, I didn't actually see who the individuals were, but 150 million plus people have the same wealth as like three dudes. It's crazy. So the wealth that they're saying, oh, America's wealthy. No, sorry. America has some wealthy people in it, but America's not wealthy. You know, and so I think you do have a point there, man. And look, one big problem out of those three pillars is the inequality factor, dude. And that, to me, dude, is where we can really make a difference with this, like, local organizing. Because if we can redirect the capital from going into Walmart or Amazon or our local cable company, our the grocery store, and if that money instead goes instead of into that pyramid scheme where it winds up being part of the machine, if it can go more in a circular motion where it stays in the community, well, I mean, it only makes sense that that money, a lot of that money is going to wind up coming back into your own pockets, right?
Yep. Well, the way I'd like to think of it is that you'd build your own infrastructure. You'd build your own. You'd build everything on your own. I mean, ideally, we won't have a jack of all trades, but as your community grows, you're going to grab people who are specialists in certain areas that you need, you know? Ideally, you'd want to, you know, after the first generation, if you aren't already, like, killed off, like all these other cults and stuff that they all would like to make those random-ass things.
Like in Waco, where the government came in and burned them alive.
Burned them alive, yeah. What the? Anyway.
I know. What was with that, dude? Like, talk about freaking mass ritual.
Yeah,
that was horrible.
Like, how are you going to burn children alive?
I would have to say it's something I got to do a little bit more research on, too, because I've heard that these people are very similar. Ideally, the idea for them was the same. They wanted to have a community. They wanted to, you know, kind of live their own lives. And I guess that kind of... I didn't think they really liked that.
They were armed, dude. That was the main thing.
Yeah. It's like these. I don't know. Like, I've never looked that far into Waco. I know it was a religious.
It's why they killed. You remember in Philly, when the Black Panthers took over and they bombed an entire city block.
Yeah.
Anytime groups of people come together armed, they will squash them literally. Like, they'll just kill them. They don't care. If it gets up to like a couple hundred people with arms and they start a movement and it starts. They start that 200th monkey effect or whatever, dude. They just kill them.
There's a pattern there, dude. They burn fools with fire, and then also that's how they got Dorner too. You know, they burn them with fire. You know, so that's one thing. Build your shit. When you build your shit up, build it fireproof.
Right?
Keep history in mind. Build it out of brick.
Hey, that's why it's not crazy to have a bunker, right, Nick? With that Sherman tank.
I mean,
metal roof, brick building.
That's the other idea, right? Once you start your community above ground, let's go ahead and spend some of that money to go underground. Huh?
Yeah. No.
It doesn't matter without a Sherman, though.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the tenets of going off-grid within the United States is that you got to also be able to practice self-defense and, you know, being able to maintain... you know, your property and maintain your community and not let it be infringed upon by bad actors and stuff. And I hate to say it, dude, but you know, the government is the number one bad actor. If I had a community where I was out there doing my own thing and yeah, maybe I was growing my own weed or something like that for instance, I wouldn't be worried as much about thieves as I would be worried that the fucking feds are coming down on you. And so, you know, the bad actor of choice in the United States at this point is normally the fucking cops or the authorities, because when I go out and I'm walking down the street or riding my bike at night, I'll tell you who I've been harassed by more. If it's like thugs or like, you know, crazy homeless people or cops, it's been the cops. Like, I haven't been harassed by thugs in like a long time. Back in my old days when I used to, you know, get more involved in that kind of stuff. It's been a very long time, and I haven't had a situation with a homeless guy in a long time, or just a, you know, maybe a crazy person on the street, where I've actually been afraid for my own safety. It's been a pretty long time, but I'll tell you, a lot more recently, I got pulled over by a cop, literally just for riding my bike on the sidewalk on a street, on a main street where there's no bike lane. You know, where you don't want to get hit by a car, so you ride your bike on the sidewalk, and I got pulled over by a cop for that. That was the most recent time I had to deal with one of those three, you know, bad actors, you know, and the last time it was a cop, and the time before that, it was another cop, and the time before that was another cop. So, you know, I think the people you need to worry most about, like you said, man, when you're starting a community and doing something that goes slightly off the grid, goes against the grain of the typical system where everybody's paying a shitload of money for everything and everyone's paying a shitload of taxes. The moment you go against that grain, well, the bad actor you're going to worry about is the some form of government agency, some authority of some point, of some sort. Yeah. The second thing you need to worry about are thieves, the people trying to rip you off, scam artists, you know.
Well, I looked into like a couple of properties already. Like ideally, if you wanted to build like a community like this, you wanted it to be on a. I would have to say probably a Republican state where the property laws are a little bit more stringent and you can protect your property better. I looked at, well, this isn't, I wouldn't say this is Republican, I haven't even done the research yet on this, but I know that in Montana you can buy 8,000 acres for about $3 to $4 million. 8,000 acres is quite a bit of land.
That's huge.
Yeah. And you can put so much on that. So, I mean, Montana, yeah, you gotta deal with the elements, but you know what? That's also a place where you have tons of resources. You know, you're far enough away from a lot of things. So, I mean, it's just about finding the right place and making sure that we still abide by rules and regulations set by them.
Yeah.
Keep them happy.
Well, you know, that's the beauty of starting your own communities, is that you set your own ground rules and stuff, and there's a certain amount of protection you have. And then, of course, if your community grows large enough, you can physically defend it. And I think that's an important aspect. You know, having a community like, I don't know how big Waco was. I have never done my research on that, but I don't know. I'm guessing a few dozen.
There's a couple hundred people. It was just like, I mean, that's really what it is for them, the threshold.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a good amount. Yeah. But once you get up into the thousands and stuff, you start getting to the point where you can physically defend something with force if you need to.
They'll never let that happen, man.
Yeah,
you want to face them in court.
Look, here's the thing, man. In the past, it hasn't been able to happen, but in the future, I think it can, because these ideas that me and Mike are talking about, me and DB, we've been talking about this for years,
yeah.
Right? These ideas, believe me, we're not the only ones talking about this kind of stuff. Like, this conversation is being had in every fucking city and town across this country, and everybody's waiting for their little chance to do this shit.
Yep.
And believe me, it's going to be a movement, and when one happens and it becomes successful and it becomes, for some reason or another, it becomes mainstream, it'll probably be some controversial shit that happened. Maybe even involving a law enforcement getting involved, and probably that's what it'll be. It's going to inspire these movements to start happening spontaneously all across the country, where it's not like, oh, there's some major organization with a president that's organizing all this shit. No, it's going to happen autonomously, spontaneously all around the country. And dude, there's going to be nothing that any Fed can do to stop it. It's going to just become so big that it's going to start challenging, I think. And maybe I'm looking a little too far ahead here, but I really think these kind of rethinking the community, going back to a decentralized, autonomous, you know, community, is going to reshape our whole fucking society, dude. Like, it's going to it's going to change everything, the way we do everything, from education to energy to food to government, hopefully, too. Like, when these communities start taking root and they start saying, okay, we got this, you know, we've secured this, you know, let's just say, for instance, in Montana, they got, let's say they secured 8,000 acres in Montana, and they said, okay, well, we've been running this 8,000 acres really well. We don't need the federal government to have authority over this area any longer. And we say, you know what, we're seceding from this country and we're going to do our own thing. We don't have any problem with you guys. We'll still do business with you, but we just don't want you telling us what to do anymore.
When that kind
of stuff starts happening, of course, it's going to be very contentious. And we've had states talking about seceding recently in the United States. I'm telling you guys, dude, I've talked to so many people about these ideas, dude. They're happening all around the country. There's people that want to secede from Florida to Maine to California to Washington, dude. Like, and everywhere in between, there's people that are looking to do these kind of things.
Doesn't Maine want to become part of Canada?
Do they?
I think Canada was going to buy it.
I wouldn't blame them.
I think they had a vote, and it was like 52%, so they wanted to have some kind of like legal way to do it.
Doesn't Alaska want to become back part of Russia, dude?
That would be not very smart.
As if Russia weren't big enough as it is.
Right.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah, dude, I mean, shit, man. These are the ideas that I think in the next 10, 15 years are going to be very, very fruitful in their, you know, in what they create and what they cause. One awesome, awesome idea I want to just throw out there for anybody listening tonight is the idea of freedom cells. Freedom cells are a group of, it's a very small community. I think they're based around units of eight, I believe. But it's kind of like a way of organizing a little, it's kind of like a deliberate way of organizing yourself, a hive mind, that it can multiply a number, but by units of eight, and basically is getting a bunch of different people who are able to become specialized in eight different areas, and using that for the advantage of the whole group. And I think that's the whole idea here that we're talking about is that human beings have been organized in an inefficient way. We've been organized in a fashion where a bunch of us work and then we create something that's worth value and then we hand it off to someone else who acquires the value out of that product. And that's kind of like the American capitalist system, where it's a market system, but it's not a free market system, where it's a very controlled market, where, you know, there's a lot of statism and you know, government involvement, where it creates monopolies and regulations and taxes and stuff that get in the way of all the free market stuff that should be going on. You know, we've got this system that creates, it gives us a environment where we have to work extra hard and we barely get, you know, very much from it. And most of the value that gets extracted from our own work ends up going to the hands of corporations and governments. And so the idea here is that we start saying, okay, well, we're going to stop giving so much of our money to corporations, and we're going to stop giving so much of our money to governments. And the whole trick to this equation is that our money is basically it's super tied to our labor, right? And so basically we have to think, we talk about money, we got to think about labor. And so we say, okay, our work is not going to go into enriching these corporations, our work is going to go back into enriching our communities and ourselves. All the state and all these corporations, generally speaking, are just middlemen in between us becoming reliant and integral parts of our communities. That's all they are. All these governments and corporations do is get in the way of us making human contact with other human beings, because that's all the market is. You know, the market is workers creating value and products for other workers to enjoy, right? And that's kind of what market, you know, the market anarchy should be like. It's workers creating value for other workers, and the other workers finding value in that work is what creates a market economy, right? A market anarchist economy. And the state and the corporations, all they do is get in the way. And corporations, for the, you know, right-leaning people out there listening tonight, corporations are inventions of, you know, the state. I mean, corporations are just protected entities by the state. That's all they really are. You know, and so we have to reject this idea of statism, this idea of corporatism. Getting the middleman out of the way, getting us back to the roots and back to that. That's how media radio. Back. But call it a reality, cause there's no illusion. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. Stereo.